Go.
Good morning and welcome to the NativeTalk.net radio program where we have Brandon doing live music because I don't have any recorded stuff to play for you.
Had to take a breath. It's harder without that soundboard. That thing does a lot of work.
Yeah, it does. I just hit a button and it goes. But the email, if you want to be a part of the show, is podcast@nativetalk.net. And as always, you can make comments through the Facebook page. That is facebook.com/nativetalkradio. It's been a while since we did a show.
Yeah, it sounds different somehow.
Well, it could be the state we're in.
It's beautiful outside, isn't it? All this rainy weather you always complain about.
Okay, you know that Seattle is quite rainy throughout most of the year. It's like playing Russian roulette with the sunshine.
I wouldn't know. I don't live in Seattle.
Yes, you do. Where do you think we are right now?
Miles away. We're far south from there.
You throw a rock really hard and you can hit Seattle.
I just love how you complain so much about the weather, but look outside. Oh, yeah. It's glorious.
Like I said, it's like playing Russian roulette. Some days you might get a sunny stretch, but most of the time it's rainy and miserable. You forget I've been up here quite a bit and I've had 10 days straight where it did nothing but rain and drizzle and cloudy, and it was miserable.
Okay. All right. Well, when I get there, I'll let you know. In the meantime, I'm basking in the sunshine.
Okay. Well, this from the guy who says he loves the rain.
I do love the rain.
Yeah, so it won't bother you as much. You should be ticked off at the sunshine.
But see, that's what's beautiful about this weather is you might get 3-4 hours of sunshine at the cold part of the day, and then it starts getting hot outside and the clouds cover up and you get shade everywhere. And then right when the day starts to wane, the clouds break, you get a little more sunshine at nighttime, and it ends up being a great day.
And then the people who had to live through all of the months and months of rain and terribleness have already killed themselves.
Oh, poor people.
Dude, what is up with suicide these days?
Yeah, what is the deal with suicide?
No, seriously, it seems like everybody and their brother is, like, ending their lives. And it's not like they've got such horrible things happening, but they're still often themselves. Well, rich people, famous people.
I don't know how dark you want to get, but you say they don't have awful things in their lives. Well, I mean, the life is kind of awful, right?
Well, what do you think life is? Things happen and you deal with them.
Life is like a series of responsibilities that relentlessly buries you into the ground until you are literally buried in the ground.
That's what life is all about. Why do people want to cut that short? No, I'm serious. Look, I actually enjoy being alive. I enjoy, like, doing things. I find happiness in life. And, you might talk about the easy road. You know, there are a lot of ways you can take the easy road, but there's not as much, you don't get as much out of that. You know what I'm saying? You don't feel that sense of accomplishment when you do something difficult and you succeed. So we're not here to take the easy road, and nothing could be easier than just ending your life, because that's the ultimate I give up.
Man, there's a lot of things you said there that I don't even know how to interestingly rebuke, because I'm like, there is no easy road. There's no easy road in life. You can try to sit around and watch TV and eat all day long, but that's not an easy road either. Every option you have in life is difficult. There is no easy way to success. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's not about success. We're not talking about an easy road to success. We're talking about an easy road to nothing.
There is, you know? There is no
ending your life. That's
and
easy.
That's the other thing. You say ending your life is easy. Have you ever tried?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's not an easy way to go down.
And yet, more and more Americans are doing that. Suicide rates in the United States have increased in the last 20 years 30%. That is a staggering increase. We're up to 44,000 suicide deaths per year. That's insane. 44,000 people a year are killing themselves.
Yeah, it's like filling a stadium.
Yeah, right?
That does not sound like a fun game.
No, and you've got
the seats would be sticky for days.
okay. You've got famous people, Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, these people
Chester Bennington. Yeah.
I mean, these very prominent people who are joining those ranks. I mean, it's happening more and more, and it's not just them, because the average and this is just in America. You know, the average American's joining them. I hate to see the numbers around the whole world, because those aren't going to be good either.
Well, and a lot of the times I'll feel like, why is this burden thrust upon me? I didn't ask to be here. If I was given the choice before I was born to be born, would I have chosen to be born? So it's like, why am I fighting this fight, this daily struggle to get through life, when it's just as easy to embrace blackness, you know?
Blackness,
a total ending. You know what I'm saying? Like I believe the body is linked to the brain, and so when the brain ceases to function, all of your perception of life is gone as well. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
I believe when we die, we're worm food. I don't believe in eternal suffering for ending your life, which I think is a draw for a lot of people to not want to do suicide, as they think it's against their religion or that bad things will happen to them afterward. I think you're just gone, just blackness, just it's over. You're in a dreamless sleep.
Well, for a lot of people who believe that, it might make it easier to end their lives, because then it's just like suffering finished.
Yeah, instead of ending suffering, you end the sufferer.
Well, here's the hard thing for me to understand. It is so many young people, because like I could see myself doing it if I'm like I'm an old man, my body's breaking down, I'm in pain, I'm not really getting the enjoyment out of life that I used to. You know, I can see myself doing it then. But the number one cause of suicide, it's a number two among people age 10 to 34.
Wow, they have to go all the way down to 10. Yikes. Yeah,
well, you've got between 10 to 14, you've got just under 500 suicide deaths per year. So it's not that many.
That's a lot still.
Teenagers aged 15 to 24 is just under 6,000. And you've got just under 8,000 25 to 34, you know, and that's the second largest cause of death behind unintentional injury. That can be from any type of accidents, from automobile to falling off your roof. Okay. But behind that, suicide.
Wow.
And believe it or not, the older you get, the less likely it is. It's fourth for middle-aged folks, 35 to 54. Actually, about the same number, like 7,000 to 8,000, but there's like heart disease, other diseases, and stuff like that that surpass that. But once you get into old age, it's like the eighth and tenth most likely cause of death.
Yeah, because everyone's dying from everything else at that point. You make it that long, your
heart
body
disease,
just disappears.
Alzheimer's, diabetes,
you
liver
forget,
disease.
You're trying to kill yourself. You just forgot how.
Yeah, and get this. The raw numbers, just under 8,000.
So about the same.
I mean, it's about the same. My God, what is wrong with people?
Well, it's lack of love for life. Because yes, there is joy. There is joy to be found in life. Everyone's experienced it. Everyone's been in that dark place and had something unexpected make you laugh. You know, like... There's something to be said about fighting through the pain and seeing what's on the other side, but I'll be damned, dude. Tomorrow's not different than today. Tomorrow is the same as today, and if you can't handle your problem today, what's the point of living till tomorrow?
Yeah, we actually received an email a couple of weeks before, and I'm really flummoxed because I seem to have left it at home, but it was a Native woman who has had clinical depression for the last, I think she said 25 years. She's a listener of the show. She wrote in, and she heard the conversation that I had with Danelle Reed about guns and gun suicide and things like that. And she said that it is I'll have to read it next week when I actually pull it up and reference this. But she said that it's the job of the people around you to look for the signs of depression and to catch those things, because for the people who are going through it, it's a very shameful thing for them. They're embarrassed. They don't want to talk about what they're going through. They feel like they're burdening other people. And so the people who, that's why in all of these cases, people say things like, I never saw it coming.
Yeah.
It came out of the clear blue. I thought everything was fine. because they feel like this is a burden that they have to carry themselves. And she said that each and every time she had tried to commit suicide, and she said that she had done it 3 separate times she had attempted. And every time it was after like a major bad thing that happened in her life.
Yeah.
And so when you know something like that happens in somebody's life that you love, pay attention, be there for them, watch for these signs, because they're already thinking, nobody cares about me.
And you were, it really resonated with me when you said, you know, you feel like you're a burden on somebody else. You do want to keep it hidden. You want to keep it tucked away to the corner. You know, you don't want someone to know your business like that. But the thought of I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Did you really?
I can't get it back? I totally lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Okay, so anyway, we need to pay attention to folks who we love and kind of look for the mood changes.
And that's
like
the other
that.
Thing I want to say. Yes, after traumatic events, after big events, of course, keep your eye out, but it happens in the in-between just as much, maybe even more so, I would venture to say. It's that daily grind. You wake up in the morning and you're like, Jesus, like, I have to do this again, you know?
Yeah, I was reading that the people who attempt and succeed in suicide, they are, when you get to talk to them, they don't say things like, I wanted to die. They say things like, I just didn't want to live anymore. So it's not about like wanting to die. They just don't want to go through that daily grind, the things that are just giving them so much trouble. They're like, I'm just tired of it. And they don't want to live anymore.
And the more you experience good things, the more desensitized you get to it. Like if you go up in a hot air balloon, it may be great, you know, if you're into that kind of thing the first time, the second time, the 10th time, but after 20 times on a hot air balloon, you're like, all right, you know, I get it, right? and so I think that lack of luster, it just makes a dull glaze over everything, mm-hmm. and everything just becomes bland.
And and this is one of the reasons why people who attempt suicide, when they do like the autopsies and they look at the toxicology reports, more than half of them did not have any medical conditions. Okay, so they're not like all crazy, and 80% of them had one or more substances in their system. Alcohol is most common, followed by opioids, benzos, cocaine, amphetamines, things like that. And it seems like so many of the people in our country and around the world are addicted or using some kind of a substance. And why is that? I feel like it's because they're trying to escape those things. This is their coping mechanism.
Yeah, you're trying to escape life without dying. Yeah.
And then eventually they just get tired of that. That's why that helps them end things. And I think it's so sad.
Well, you know? That goes without saying. It is horribly sad, but the question is, you know, what can we do as outsiders trying to help these people's lives? And that's where I get stuck in the conversation, because as a teenager, when I learned this about myself, when I learned that I had these thoughts and feelings, it was entirely overwhelming. I was very ill-equipped to handle that darkness to carry around with me all day long. So I thought about killing myself. I never like actually put a gun to my head or put a razor blade
to me. But you considered it.
I considered it so long and so detailed that I feel like I got close to it in my head. You know, I got close to that edge and I walked myself back. I walked away from the ledge, you know, and that's why I said it's not easy. Earlier in the podcast, I say, you say it's so easy. It's not easy to pick up a razor blade or pick up a gun. It's not simple to do.
And that is why I was talking with Danelle Reed, a member of our tribe. She just ran for council in the last election. And in that conversation, we discussed how people who are contemplating suicide, if you can delay the thought to the decision of actually going through with it, in almost all cases, if you can get it by a minute, it changes most people's minds. And within 10 minutes or 20 minutes, it changes almost all of their minds, because it's almost always a snap decision, something that people choose to go forward and they later would have regretted it.
Well, I mean, Clearly, since they survived long enough to do the survey, they, you know, the ones that didn't are in the 8,000, but, you know, whatever.
But the people who considered it or attempted it or, you know, what, you know what I mean? They're reporting that it was a snap decision, and if they survive, they're saying they regret it, you know, and they didn't take time to think about it. So if you can delay, you know, this desire to decision, chances are they're not even going to try.
Well, maybe not that day. As we saw, as time goes on, there's more and more giving up. I would venture that those 8,000 of the last age group you mentioned, they've probably come close or attempted earlier in their lives as well.
Could be.
Whew. It's heavy, man. It's heavy to have these people going through it. But what I was going to say is when I was going through this darkness and through these hard times, I didn't want other people's help. I didn't want people to come save me. I almost enjoyed it. It was this really sick satisfaction.
But you kept to yourself, didn't you?
From being sad.
Because you didn't want the help.
Well, and I got off on people trying to help me and me turning them away. That gave me more of that digging myself into the hole and feeling comfortable with it.
And that's one of the reasons why I wish I had brought that letter, because that's what that woman said. She said that, you know, a lot of times they'll brush your help off, but just letting them know that you see it, that you care, hey, I'm here for you, it could make the difference when it comes down to decision time.
I suppose it could, but in my personal experience, and I know that's just my experience, it's something that I had to learn for myself, from myself, and outside influence. Yes, it was nice to have people there to support me, but in the end, it was an internal decision to live every day, to do something good for myself every day, and then that became helping other people as well. That gave me enjoyment as well.
I think we can all agree something is going on, because we're talking about a 30% increase in the last 20 years. You know, you look at 2000, the year 2000, to now, since I graduated high school. I mean, we've had this insane increase, and you're like, something is going on in this world today. Something is happening, and as a culture, we need to be doing better. What is that? That's anybody's guess.
Yeah, and that's the better term. That's, yeah, what can we do?
It's hard. Well, look, let me ask you this, because I want to see if your answer coincides with most folks. Anytime you use a substance, whether that was in the past, currently, whatever, whether that's marijuana, alcohol, or anything else, okay, why did you imbibe in that?
For what purpose?
What were you trying to get?
In the beginning or constant? Like, if I consistently imbibe?
We're talking about people who are doing it constantly. Constant imbibing, not something that you tried once, but something that you did on a continuous basis.
I'm going to kind of talk past it, but just want to briefly mention habit, that it's when you get into doing something and then you go through a day without it and you start doing regular activities, and then around those regular activities you would normally do a substance or whatever, mm-hmm. you feel an urge to do it. So there's that as well. But beyond that, I think people want to, like you said earlier, escape, man. Life is hard. Life's a bitch. And if you have a cigarette, you know, it's a little bit easier. If you have a drink of alcohol when you get home, it's easier to take your boots off and sit on the couch, you know?
Yeah. And that's pretty much right where it is. Most people are reporting, people who utilize substances, and that covers the gamut between prescription drugs, illegal drugs, alcohol. Most of them say they do it because they want to relax or relieve tension. And it seems like people's tension, stress levels are higher now than they've ever been. 8 in 10 adults, 80%, report feeling stressed throughout the day, and 44% report that their stress levels have increased dramatically over the last 5 years.
Yeah, and taking the pills and whatnot, that's so easy to do, like at work, where people, you know, if you just take a little bit. Like, I got my wisdom teeth pulled out as a young 20s, right? Mm-hmm. And they gave me these pain medications that I learned, if I just break them in half and eat one, that's like 4 hours of feeling great, and I don't act any different, you know?
Oh, I love pills.
See how bad that can be for you? And so you get addicted to that. And I mean, look at the opioid.
Fortunately, I didn't get... Oh, dude, opioids.
Look at the opioid epidemic. It's killing people left and right.
I got to be honest, man. I love opioids.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. You probably dial that back.
I really do like it. It makes me feel great. And I liked it. I dropped a big piece of plywood on my toe.
Ouch.
And I lost my toenail. I now have no big toenail. And when I went to the doctor about it, they're like, here, take this. And I'm like, can I get the good stuff?
Man, I took that Dilaudid stuff for about 3 or 4 days. I got hooked immediately.
Yeah, because I'm like, it is painful. And they were trying to give me something else. And I'm like, nah, if I got to go through this pain, give me the good stuff. Boo. And they did. They only gave me 6 pills. And I'm like, ah, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
Six pills is enough.
Break them into quarters.
No, I took them all. I didn't take them all at once. I mean, I just took whole pills because you feel better.
I just got this image of you walking away from the doctor, just chewing them like M&Ms. Thanks, doc.
No, I swallowed them normally. But but when they were gone, I didn't have a desire to continue doing it. You know, for me, I was happy with a short-term dose, and I don't feel like the need to go back to it. But when my toe hurt, I'm like, yeah, give them to me. Would you consider yourself happy?
At times.
No, I mean, in your life, in general. If I say, are you happy with your life? If it's a yes or a no question, I guess you could consider that like satisfied.
It's too complicated for a yes or a no question. I'm sorry to, I know I always do that to you, but look, I'm happy with my life right now, but I'm on an upswing. I'm riding a wave that's going into prosperity. Of course I'm going to be happy with where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And surveys, people don't have the ability to kind of go into that depth.
Yeah. And so I'm like, yes, I feel good right now. But if I took my life as a whole and that daily grind that you talked about, no. I mean, I feel sad to be here on this earth. Like it's this, like I said, I called it earlier, a darkness that I carry around with mm-hmm. me. I'm learning how to deal with it, and I'm recognizing the good in life, and I have responsibilities here that I can't just abandon. But no, I don't feel happy with life.
Well, according to surveys, you're right there with 2/3 of Americans, because only 33% report their lives as being generally happy.
Yeah, but if you were to ask me, are you happy right now? Yeah, I am. I feel really content. Okay. I feel
well.
Really
then
you might be
one of the third that reports happy, because I'm in there. I have a pretty happy life.
You,
I'm always happy.
Of course, you would say that. You never see the darkness. You're always looking for cup half full.
Well, all you need is a couple opioids and you'll see it too. So anyway, this puts us on par with the quality of life indices of a developing country. Most already developed countries have a much higher marker of health and longevity. You know, people are just happier in developed countries. We're somehow down along with less developed countries.
Huh, that's interesting.
Americans stand out from people in other countries with respect to their focus on individualism. Now, for America, I've always liked that. You know, when it comes to tribes, I think that collectivism and coming together as a large family, because that's how I see tribes. And Native Americans, whatever your people group is, this is your family, and we're all in it together, and we fight and we work for the betterment of our family. But for a general American, for an average American, they don't have that tribe. They have that, their tribe is their family. You know?
Yeah.
So...
Excluding, you know, cultural groups like I know that growing up, a lot of Hmong families, a lot of Vietnamese families, they would have large groups of people living in a small house, you know.
And well, that's their tribe,
exactly.
And they're working together.
And they absolutely did have that tribe mentality. So, I mean, and they were American, so there's people all over America that do still have that. But
but we're talking about the majority now.
Or just the average American, yeah.
And the majority of Americans believe that their success is determined by what you control. And it's very important to work hard to get ahead in life. I count myself among the people who believe that, by the way. It's the focus on our own achievements, focus on success, work culture that many believe has created an environment that's no longer sustainable, that life has become too stressful. But the thing is, it's always been that way. Well, right. What else has changed?
Well, what's changed is what you described. Rather than having picture like a plate. Picture a plate that's life's responsibilities. All this garbage is on your plate, right? Now try to hold the plate up with one stick in the middle. Yeah, you can do it, but it's going to try to lop off balance in all these different directions. You can stand firm and maybe make your pillar a little bit wider, make it easier. But now imagine if you had 10 sticks all holding it up from different angles.
If they're paying me enough.
Jesus Christ. If you have a whole bunch of sticks holding the plate up, it's going to stand firm. It's not going to wobble, you know, and it's not going to be as hard. It's not as much of a burden to lift. And so if you have a lot of people helping you out and you are not an individual taking all of life's challenges squarely on your shoulders, well, it's easier. And you have people to lament with because they're going through the same stuff. So you have camaraderie, you have companionship, rather than just being alone at your house Netflixing and chilling, you know?
Well, yeah, you have to have a family. This is why Native American tribes are so fantastic, because you've got kind of like this built-in family. And when you try to join the modern colonial way of life, where you're trying to be individuals, I think you're gonna find a struggle there.
Yeah,
you know?
And even having a family in your own household, that's still, it's still stress on your family. It's still kind of the situation I described earlier, because there's even more responsibility with a family, and to have just one individual pairing try to take care of all of that by themselves. Yeah, no wonder people want to swallow the business end of a 9mm.
I don't know. I'd rather go shoot beer cans.
Yeah, you'd rather, if you were gonna do it, you'd probably just use the pills to end it.
I don't have enough of them. If anyone wants to send me some,
oh no, I think that might be illegal. You probably shouldn't do that.
podcast@nativetalk.net. Email me. Jesus. All right, look, if anybody out there is struggling with depression, struggling with dealing with life, there's always help. And you know, if you want to email this show, podcast@nativetalk.net, for that or any other reasons.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
You just send us an email and we are happy to read your emails, to discuss your issues and try to help you out in any way. And there are always professional, because believe it or not, we're not actually professionals.
You don't say. You mean we aren't doctorates?
I could be. I'm smart enough.
Work hard. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's way too much work. I'm content just being smart enough to have a doctorate, but putting in absolutely none of the work required, okay? Because while I am quite intelligent, I'm also very lazy.
Yeah, you're contradicting yourself with earlier, Mr.
Intelligence does
bootstraps.
Not have to do with anything about laziness in regards to schoolwork, because schoolwork sucks.
It is true. It's very tedious.
Quite. So anyway, look for help. Email us anonymously if you need to. And last thing we want to talk about is the Plains Indians. It's been a while since we discussed the Plains Indians.
Now, why are we talking about Native Americans on a podcast about depression and opoioids?
Because it's still the NativeTalk.net radio podcast, and we didn't take any breaks today because I don't have any.
Oh, yeah.
So the transition
feels... I can beatbox it.
So the transition, while it feels a little bit more abrupt, I wanted to talk about this because somebody I know just bought a brand new house in Seattle.
No. Who could possibly live up there? I don't.
You do.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
I got all excited, but you took the wind right out of my sails.
Hey, look, do you see the Space Needle right
God
over
bless
there?
It. This is so far from Seattle.
It's really not.
It's like an hour and 20 minutes to Seattle from here.
Because of traffic. Take away the traffic and it's
barely
really,
an hour.
It's barely up the road. Anyway, because you bought a house, I wanted to talk.
Love this
we were
place.
Discussing the, you've got your actually like a little studio area.
Well, it's soon to be.
Record.
It looks more like a shed right now, but it'll be a studio-ish.
I think it is a shed.
Yeah.
A very messy one.
It's on its way, though. That...
Dude, I should post pictures of your shed on the pot, the website.
No, I really don't want people to have photos of my shed.
It's got a refrigerator,
no,
too.
No, thanks. It has a freezer.
Yeah. Is there anything good in there?
Yeah, there's some Otter Pops. Mm. Some ice cream.
Otter Pops.
Yeah, there's some frozen meat you can gnaw on a chicken leg.
All right, so anyway.
Anyway.
I wanted to talk about the way the Plains Indians used to live and their houses, because as you well know, they lived in...
teepees.
I don't have a ding, but ding.
I kind of saw the red text. I didn't really know.
Are you serious?
Well, I would have guessed, because I know that Plains Indians usually followed buffalo and that they would carry their homes on their backs. So they were, you know, they were nomadic in that sense. And so I would imagine teepees are probably easier than wigwams or log cabins, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's because they were nomadic. I'm just saying I miss my audio equipment, my instant replay.
Yeah,
stuff.
I miss it too. It feels weird without it.
It's all right. When I go home, we'll have to...
just edit it in. Just ding!
No, this is getting posted today.
Oh.
Sunday.
Wow.
All right. So anyway, the teepee was a Plains Indian home. It was made of buffalo hide fastened around very long wooden poles and designed in a cone shape. I'm sure nobody out there can visualize a teepee.
Yeah, I don't think people are very familiar with the shape of them.
The nice thing about teepees is that they were warm in the winter and cool in the summer. How is that? How are they warm in the winter and cool in the summer?
I would guess it has something to do with the skin.
Yeah, but it's not magic. they didn't install air conditioning. It's not like, I in teepee, where is thermostat? Come on.
I don't know.
With the sun beating down on it, like, it doesn't heat up in there? If you imagine this shed on a hot summer day. It's probably freaking hot in here.
Well, it's not right now, but I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know how they did it.
There's no answer to this question. You just posed this to me without a follow-up?
I'm wondering, okay?
Well, I mean...
I don't read this stuff beforehand. Look, man, I found the information. I printed it out. I thought this would be interesting. Questions come up as we go.
Lucky questions.
One thing I know is they were very large. They're not like the teepees that we typically today imagine. The teepees back then were so large, they could hold 30 to 40 people comfortably.
Ooh. Wow.
So, you know, just like the longhouses could accommodate a large number of folks, teepees were the same way.
How many did you say?
30 to 40 people comfortably.
That'd be like as big as this shed.
Bigger, dude.
Well, no, because you'd sit in a circle.
I'm talking about laying down. Like sleeping. 30 to 40 people lived in there.
Oh, I thought they were just like chilling in the one place.
People do more than just chill in the teepee, dude.
Well, I thought you have a lot of teepees, but everyone gathers in a big one, you know?
Well, they had, like the party tent.
The hangout teepee, yeah.
We're going to hang out here, and then we'll go back to my little home.
It's the warmest and coolest one, depending
on
the season.
They used 15-foot poles, which were sometimes hard to find. Many natives became very good at making extremely sturdy poles.
Got a sturdy pole for you.
They were so good at them that they used them for trade. A typical trade would be 5 poles for a horse.
Those are some expensive poles.
They were hard to find, and it was hard to make ones that were sturdy enough to hold that much weight.
Holy moly.
So if you were good at it, you could trade 5 poles for a horse. That ain't bad, especially back then. That's like a car.
Mm-hmm.
Only a 1-horsepower car. Ford hadn't made their Model T yet.
Yeah, it was like 2 horses.
A teepee used a hide flap as a doorway. Weather permitting, the entrance would face east towards the rising sun. That's like their alarm clock. When the sun came up, you're like, ah, my eyes! if weather was miserable or a storm was brewing, people would position the flap opening in whichever way would best serve the comfort of the occupants. So like, you know, opposite of the wind, because you don't want the wind blowing in. And I wonder what kind of a bright idea, you know, who came up with that as they're all shivering and somebody goes, dude, this is mobile. Why don't we like move it?
Everyone stand outside, pick a pole.
People would arrange their teepees in a circle with all of the opening flaps facing the center created by the circle. So the younger kids could play in the open space while the parents could watch and do other things while their parents were outside playing. How did they lock the door?
Kids were outside playing. Well, you gotta you know, hang a sock off the flap. And
kids don't
hang a moccasin off.
Look, I've got a lock on my bathroom door, and kids will. The minute you need to go do your business, your kids will be trying to break down that door.
That's just because my kids are ankle biting me everywhere I go. They're always following me around, seeing what I'm doing.
Women were in charge of the teepees, as they should be.
Oh, Cliff.
It was up to the woman where to place a teepee. The teepee was their castle, and they were in charge of anything to do with it, including building it, erecting it, and breaking it down for transports. Kind of like how today's woman is responsible for the kitchen.
Wah, wah, wah.
Was that a joke? She was in charge of all behavior inside the teepee as well. If she said, time for bed, everyone went to sleep, or get the hell out. She was in charge inside the teepee. It was her domain. Okay? Men were in charge of working outside the teepee. It was up to them to bring back the skins necessary to cover the pole. So basically, women handle the inside. Really? Really? So women were in charge of inside the home, and men did all the yard work.
Wow.
They had to make the poles, put the skin over the poles.
Yeah, baby.
And men often painted the outside of the teepees. Painting
poles.
Painting was often symbolic of their achievement, and each tribe had their own style. So the men painted it, took care of the yard, cut the grass, planted the garden, things like that. There was a small fire in the center for cooking. You know, have you seen them? Like, they would have, like, at the very top, it was an opening for the smoke to get off.
Lucky smoke.
To let the smoke out. When it rained or snowed, the men were sent outside to wrap an extra piece of hide around the top to prevent the rain from coming in. But they still left a little bit of room for smoke to get out. Now, the Plains people used almost no furniture. They were the original minimalists.
Mm-hmm.
They slept on buffalo skins on the floor.
Oh, I bet those are comfy.
I don't know, man. There's no cushion.
The skin's your cushion. What are you talking about?
Still kind of lumpy. You probably got lumpy floor. You know,
probably
what?
Not. I would love to get
a buffalo skin and try sleeping on it. Have you traveled the plains? There's lumpy. The ground is lumpy.
Yes, Clifton. Rocks exist even in the plains. But you know what? As humans, we have the ability to move them. you just move that rock out the way, lay your skin over the top. I bet that was super comfy.
Ah, I mentioned locks. Locking the door. Okay, teepee etiquette. If the entrance flap was open, it was an invitation for any and all to enter. But if the flap was closed, you had to announce yourself and wait for an invitation to enter the teepee.
That seems fair.
I need 3 more minutes.
Yeah. I'll see you at the fire in 10.
Even if you lived there, you had to get an invitation. A guest always sat to the left of the head of the family, who always sat farthest from the door flap. And these were just rules that everybody knew and everybody followed.
So would that always be the woman's spot? Because that's her domain?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be because it was her home, and that's where she sat on the inside, and she had to do the dishes, cook the meals. You know, not a lot's changed.
Wow, Clifton. I wonder how we're related.
What? Doesn't your wife do that?
We share. We work together. We do all tasks that need doing. Like, for example, while I was out here working yesterday, she was in there mounting bookshelves to the wall, right? With an actual drill, you know, a woman using a tool. Ah! Like, she was actually... anyway, you saw last night, while we were chatting last night, I started loading a dishwasher. Right? Because that's what needed to be done in the house at the time. If you're a participating member of a couple, you should do whatever actions are required for the household while you're there.
Well, I agree with you. That's not funny.
Oh, yeah.
All right. That'll do it for us today. Want to thank you guys, as always, for listening. But we will hopefully be back next week.
With I got more a whole studio now.
Stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net.
Finally phone number. Done with that god-awful move. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. It's a long ways up. Phone number, if you want to leave a message, 970-278-5791. And we hope you will share the show with your friends and send them to our website and like us on Facebook if you have a chance. So have a great day. We'll see you next week. Make sure to buy insurance. Insurance. It's for everybody.